Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is October 1st, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. So the first day of the fourth quarter, and it came in with some volatility. So that's going to be the highlight of today's podcast. Manufacturing down, volatility up. Now, we're going to focus here today primarily on more of the economic and financial news. We've been focused primarily here over the last few days, including last week, on the impeachment inquiry, the documents that have come out from the White House itself in regards to that phone call between Donald Trump and President Zelensky of Ukraine, the memo from the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, and also the formal whistleblower's complaint. We've taken our time to go through that, to read those documents in their entirety, simply to give this audience the facts of the case. Period. Stop. That's it. There's no speculation. This is what has been stated. This is what is out there in the public domain. This is not MSNBC. This is not CNN clipping certain notes here or there to fit their narrative. This is not Fox News clipping certain notes to fit their narrative. This is presenting you with all of the information. And again, I encourage you, if you haven't done so already, to look at those documents yourself, because they are important. This is an historic moment in the Republic of the United States of America. Most definitely. This impeachment is not to be used lightly. So this is serious business, and this is going to have ripple effects for many, many years to come. Because if this turns out to be truly partisan politics, I mean, it's only a matter of time, ladies and gentlemen, before a Democrat becomes the president of the United States once again. Will the Republicans do the same thing? Because, you know, if you're digging in on your side, if you're getting siloed in, you know, there's hypocrisy all over the place. If you think it's okay now, if you're a Democrat, you're going to think it's okay when your guy's in office and the Republicans are doing it to him or her. You're not going to like it. I can already answer that question. So we have to be extremely careful. There's a lot of information out there, and a lot of it is speculation. You know, people want to defend the president. That's fine. I get it. People want to attack the president, defend the Democrats and what they're doing. I get it. But you got to take a deep breath, because this is only serving to further divide this country. And that is not a good thing at all, especially when we have the backdrop of deteriorating economic fundamentals, not just in this country, but around the globe. Well, again, it started with around the globe. The United States is not an island unto itself. We can only be shielded so much from the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans. A lot of this stuff is coming home to roost. A lot of this is our own doing. So let's talk about some of the news in the markets today and its effect on the marketplace. So what caused the big sell-off in today's markets was U.S. factory activity shrinks the most in a decade. You heard me correctly, in a decade. The ISM Manufacturing PMI Purchasing Managers Index in the United States dropped to 47.8 in September from 49.1 in the previous month, missing market expectations of 50.1. So recall, ladies and gentlemen, if you're at 50, it's neutral. If you're above 50, it indicates economic expansion. If it's below 50, it indicates economic contraction. We have been below 50 for the past 2 months here, at least, and now we're at a decade low with 47.8 on the most recent reading that was released today. The markets did not like this. Of course they didn't, nor should they. This is no surprise to us here. We've been talking about this for months. Now it's just being realized in the data. Markets are supposed to be forward-looking. Markets are supposed to sniff this stuff out weeks in advance. Okay? They're not. They're waiting for the news. This is not good. This is not a market at all. This is the market that is continuing to cling to hope that there is going to be some sort of resolution, truce, trade deal between the United States and China. It doesn't care about this preliminary trade deal with the United States and Japan, because they're going to buy more pork or they're going to buy more soybeans. I told you, soybeans is not going to fix the problem. This is a headline for the president of the United States and his administration to say he's a deal maker, to say we got trade deals going on, we can do this, and everything's going to be great for the farmers. I want our farmers to succeed. I want everybody in this country to succeed. But making this stuff up isn't going to fix it. You got to be real with the people. And right now, this president and his administration is not. And I am not singling out Donald Trump. If this was Barack Obama, I'd go after him too. Okay? but that's a problem. So what's going to be agreed upon between the United States and China? Not much, likely. I mean, at this point, because of the political pressures that are mounting on Donald Trump with this impeachment inquiry, is he going to buckle down here? Is he going to say, yeah, I got to just get a deal so I can distract everybody from what's going on here? Okay? Is he going to dig in and say, I'm going to play the tough guy, and then I can blame the Democrats for this? Because, hey, I can't get anything done. The Chinese don't want to work with me because they think I'm going to be impeached because of these crazy Democrats. He could play that card. I would not be surprised. But you don't know what the man's going to do. You just don't. He has that Trump card, and how's he going to play it? So we got to pay close attention to this, but that's what the market is sort of clinging to. The market is also clinging to the hopes, and this is going to be a reality, let's just be realistic here, that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to cut interest rates. The markets are already pricing in, I think, about a 60% probability that the Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates in their next meeting, which is to take place at the end of this month, the last week of October. They're going to cut them by a minimum of 25 basis points. There are some market analysts out there that are saying quantitative easing is going to be announced at this next meeting. I don't know if it's going to be announced because I think they might call it something different. They're most definitely not going to say this time that quantitative easing is an emergency measure like they did a decade ago under former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke. That was a one-off. That was an experiment. That was in the midst of the great financial crisis, the Great Recession, the worst experience in this country, and quite honestly, globally, since the Great Depression of the 1930s. So you said, oh, okay, well, let's give these guys a chance. Let's see what they can do. They're a bunch of egghead PhDs. Maybe they know something. Of course, these are the same eggheads who caused the problem, but maybe they can solve it. They can break our legs, but hey, they gave us crutches. Aren't they nice? A decade later, where are we? Income inequality at its widest since the Census Bureau has been keeping tabs. And like I said in yesterday's podcast, if you listen to Ray Dalio, the world's largest hedge fund manager, and I happen to agree with this in his data, his research, this is the largest gap, in the inequality gap, I should say, it has been since the Great Depression. Because the census data only goes back to the 60s, I believe. This is not good, folks, but this is a causation from easy money, from zero interest rate policy, from quantitative easing. It's direct linkage. It's causation, not correlation, causation. And now what do we want to do? We're going right back to it. Going right back to it. A couple months ago, at the end of July, when the Federal Reserve cut interest rates, oh, everybody, everything's fine. Fantastic, actually. This is just a mid-adjustment cycle. That's all this is. This is just a mid-cycle adjustment when they cut interest rates. That's all. So it's just a one-off, Jay Powell? That's it? No. And we knew that was not going to be it. They're trying to jawbone the markets. They're trying to inject rhetorically that there is some sort of strength in this economy. There is not, ladies and gentlemen. There is not. This is a business cycle that is more powerful than all of us, as it should be, despite the many attempts to keep this thing propped up, which they have done, by the way, but it's at an expense. It is not for free. And we are all going to be paying for it dearly. That's why I tell you to stay diversified and stay vigilant. Because this news here with this manufacturing data does not bode well for anybody. It doesn't bode well for these industries. It doesn't bode well for these employees. It does not bode well for, quite frankly, the President of the United States, who says he's the jobs president and is trying to realign everything to have a booming manufacturing sector. Well, the manufacturing sector is not booming. In fact, it's in contraction. So this is not good stuff. Now, of course, Donald Trump is not going to take responsibility for this contraction, and he's not. He took to Twitter today, and guess who he's blaming? The Federal Reserve. I have no problem with the president blaming the Federal Reserve. For those of you who have been with me, I want to end. I want to abolish the Federal Reserve. I want to abolish the federal income tax. Then you will start to see problems getting resolved. But Donald Trump wants the Federal Reserve to go to zero. He wants them to go back to zero, and he wants them to go back to quantitative easing. That is the problem, ladies and gentlemen, that pushes people further out onto the risk curve to make decisions that they otherwise would not have made. You see the problem with this? You take stupid, careless bets. And once this thing starts to accumulate in the aggregate across 300 million Americans, across 7 billion people on this planet, or whatever it is now, you see the picture? You see why this is problematic? You see why these debt chickens are going to come home to roost? You see why this isn't going to be pretty? Because we have more debt now than we did during the Great Financial Crisis. What was the cause of the Great Financial Crisis? Debt. Too much debt. Now there's even more. So you solve that riddle and you tell me how this one isn't going to be worse than the last one. Because even in the midst of all of this, we now have a liquidity crunch that is taking place here in the United States. And we talk about this. This is referring to the repo market, where banks, on an overnight basis, there's not enough liquidity to get them in compliance with their reserve ratio requirements. So they have to go, basically, to an emergency window at the Federal Reserve to be saved, to the tunes of tens of billions of dollars, quite honestly, hundreds of billions of dollars since this started. Now, this started a couple weeks ago during the very week that the Federal Reserve had their policy rate decision. And what did Chairman Jay Powell tell us? He said, oh, yeah, this is just a one-off issue here. And what was the excuse? Corporate taxes were coming due, and some U.S. treasuries were maturing. And so there was an excess demand for U.S. dollars. Well, we were saying this was just a one-off, right? Maybe a couple days. No, not a couple days. He just had to say something because he had his meeting. He was going to be questioned on this. And why was he questioned on this? Because the Federal Reserve hasn't had to intervene in this market since the Great Recession. So this was big news. Tried to calm fears, and then what happens? Oh, next day, more institutions are going to the Federal Reserve to be bailed out, because that's what it is. It's an overnight bailout. And then what happened the next day? Same thing, and the next day, and the same thing. And then they finally just threw their hands up and said, hey, guess what? We're just going to have to continue with this repo market for the next few weeks, and it's going to expire on the 10th of October. So we still got a couple weeks to go here, ladies and gentlemen. Well, 8 days, like 9 days, I guess. But the question is, will they? Will they honestly end the program? Or will it just be a breather until their next meeting at the end of this month to say, well, guess what? We're going to do quantitative easing. Or they're going to call it something else, which they're not going to call it an emergency measure. They're just going to say this is normal progress, or the normal process of monetary policy now. We screwed the pooch for the last decade. We can't normalize. This goes, to our presentation that is on thecapitalnews.com and on our YouTube channel, The Capital News, titled, Are Central Bankers Trapped? And we did that video presentation in a very timely manner right before their July meeting, where they cut interest rates for the first time. Okay, that was that mid-cycle adjustment. And we said, let's look at the balance sheets. Let's look visually at what quantitative easing actually has been over the past decade, not just here in the United States, but at the Bank of Japan and the ECB, the European Central Bank. And what did we say? We said, well, it looks like they're trapped. It looks like they're going to have to continue to print money. They don't have to be trapped. They could come out with a big dose of honesty and say we messed up, but they're not going to do that. They will never admit defeat. They're not going to do it. Just like Donald Trump is not going to admit defeat or take responsibility. Central banks are not going to admit defeat, that they were wrong, and take responsibility. It's not how this works. There's no leadership. That's why we have the problems that we have. There's no truth. There's no honesty. There's no leadership. And this is the world over. That's why you have people protesting all around the globe. Pick a country. It's either happening or it's likely going to in the near future. So central bankers are trapped. And if you understand this liquidity crunch, and I don't even think that I fully understand it, because I think there's so much that's going on behind the scenes that's never going to see the light of day. I don't think any of us can fully understand this. But what we've been arguing is, if the central bank is going to come to quote-unquote the rescue to give the addicts on Wall Street their dose, their hit, their fix, they are going to have to make QE1, QE2, Operation Twist, and Quantitative Easing 3 look like child's play. So QE4, whatever the hell they're going to call it, is going to dwarf all of them, quite honestly, possibly combined, to get the same effect. Diminishing marginal returns. We talk about that here all the time. And who's going to have to pay for this? You are. I am. This is hyperinflationary. This is disastrous. This is the devaluation of the dollar. This is the currency war at play if the Federal Reserve embarks on this. Because let me tell you something, they're not going to come out and do this. They're not going to come out with a bazooka and say QE4, whatever they're going to rename it, is going to be bigger than QE3, QE2, QE1, all combined. They're not going to come out and do that. They're not. They're going to drip. You know, they're going to do little by little. And it's not going to be enough. We're going to continue to see PMI numbers deteriorating across the manufacturing and the services sector. We're going to continue to see the transport sector continue to lead lower. Cash freight index, we talked about that, and we're going to continue to monitor the cash freight index, because remember from that most recent report, the authors of the cash freight index are projecting that by the end of this year, U.S. GDP will be in contraction. That means it's a negative number. It means it's below zero. And that could happen in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, because that's all we have, because we had the final revision for second quarter GDP, and that came at 2%. 2%. And we have a $1 trillion deficit to boot. So we're spending like drunken sailors, and all we get for it is 2% growth with a downward trajectory. So with that manufacturing data being at a decade low, how did the markets respond? Well, the S&P lost 36.5 points, a loss of 1.2%. The Dow gave back 344 points, a decline of 1.3%. The NASDAQ lost 91, a loss of 1.1%. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gave back 30 points, right around a loss of 2%. The Dow Jones Transports, which I just mentioned, lost 2.3% on the day. Then the New York Stock Exchange lost 1.3% on its trading session. Oil pulled back a little bit from yesterday's podcast. WTI is trading at $54.30 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is at $59.40 a barrel. Gold and silver both picked up a little bit, but just a little bit from yesterday. Gold is trading at $1,477 an ounce. Silver is at $17.20 an ounce. So with all of these central banks continuing to cut interest rates, which we discussed on yesterday's podcast, this gives me more confidence and a stronger belief that the precious metals market is in a bull market. They're going to continue to do this. So be diversified at the very least by having some ownership of gold and silver in one form or the other. Physical ETFs, mining stocks, one way or the other, or a combination thereof. Do yourself a favor. U.S. 10-year Treasury down slightly at 1.64%, so a flight to safety. The VIX, the Volatility Index, gained 14.3% for the day and is now trading at $18.56. A little bit more on the transportation front, because we've been monitoring a couple stocks for the past couple weeks intermittently. And FedEx lost another 3 percentage points for the day and is trading at $142 a share. Why do I highlight this? Because it was back in January of 2018. Remember when there were some market highs back in January of 2018? FedEx had a high of $262 a share. All right, $262 a share. It is now at $142 a share. That is a loss, ladies and gentlemen, of 45.8%. A loss of 45.8%. This is not a small potatoes company. This is in the transportation sector. Now, I acknowledge that this is only one company, and there's a whole host of reasons why that's likely to be more volatile than a broader index or a broader or a subset of an industry such as the Dow Jones Transports, which is not down 45.8% from its all-time high. It's down, it's almost in correction territory, about 10% from its high, but not quite. But it's getting there. But the reason I highlight this with FedEx is FedEx a leading indicator in and of itself? Is this a leading indicator for the Dow Jones Transports to head lower? Because UPS wasn't doing it pretty either today. 45.8% decline from its high in January of 2018. In the midst of what we're told is the greatest economy ever in the United States. Well, then FedEx should be doing just fine. But they're not. 45.8%. What have I been saying here for months? My base case as to where the broader stock market will be headed, a loss of 40%. So if FedEx is a leading indicator for the broader market, then it's right where I have been projecting for months now. And that's my base case, 40%. That's if things are rosy and somehow we can pull ourselves out of this. It's going to be much worse, in my opinion, when all the dust settles, because there's too much debt. Again, great financial crisis. You had subprime, you had households, you had a handful of corporations that were overlevered. Now it's everybody. It's households, it's consumers again. It's students. Obviously, you're going to throw them in consumer, but it's student debt this time. It's luxury real estate. It's commercial real estate. It's corporations whose debt has doubled since a decade ago. It's governments whose debt has doubled since a decade ago. There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to run. Who's going to bail out the governments? Who's going to bail out the central bankers? You and me. You and me. We don't have enough money. So where are they going to go to get it? Are they going to go into our retirement accounts? Are they going to go specifically into our checking and savings accounts? I mean, they want to see a civil war or a revolution. That's what they're going to be asking for it if that happens. But I don't know where else they're going to get it. Of course, there's always that possibility that they just print money, and instead of giving it to the big boys, they're going to print helicopter money and give it to the masses. Now, you better have gold and silver when that happens, because that's hyperinflationary by definition. So pay attention to these things. Pay attention to FedEx. Pay attention to UPS, and pay attention to the Dow Jones Transports. That's why we talk about the Dow Jones Transports here on a daily basis, because in my opinion, it is a leading indicator. And that's just not me who believes that. That's the Dow theory. That's been around for quite a while. So again, we have this disconnect between the small caps. We have a disconnect between the Dow Jones Transports. We have a disconnect between the financials, which tend to lead the markets. And we still have the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500 nearing all-time highs. Now, of course, today is somewhat of an exception, but minus today, that's where they were headed. And one day does not make a trend, so who knows what's going to come out tomorrow? Maybe Peter Navarro, Larry Kudlow, Mnuchin, Wilbur Ross, the president himself, they'll all be standing around there saying, we've got to deal with China. It's close. It's real close, even though they're celebrating their 70th anniversary. Yeah, we're still having those talks. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they come out and make comments, but that's all going to, you know, hinge on what the president wants to do there in that regards too, because again, he might want to set up the Democrats to say, I can't get a deal done because they're coming after me with this, not only impeachment, he's now up the rhetoric. He's now stating that this is a coup. Okay. Not just impeachment, that this is a coup. So, you know, the Democrats are staging a coup on me. The Chinese don't want a deal. I don't want a deal because I'm not going to trust that they're going to trust me. And, you know, this is the Democrats' fault. So we don't know what's going to happen there. But we know that Donny Boy does not like it when the stock market sells off. And so imagine that something is going to be coming out in regards to U.S.-China trade, because they are milking that cow as much as they possibly can. I don't know how much more milk is in this cow, but they're going to keep doing it until she's dry, believe me when I tell you. And then just for the sake of consistency, we've also been focusing a little bit on U.S. Steel and that share price. They gained 3.3% today and are trading at $11.93 a share. And the reason we've been focusing on U.S. Steel, obviously the manufacturing sector, but because since Donald Trump has placed this these tariffs on steel, U.S. Steel in particular has lost about 70% of their market value. So that's not pretty. We got FedEx losing 46%. We got U.S. Steel losing 70%, but somehow everybody's winning. You tell me how that's winning. Now, to our volatility model, which I updated here today, because, well, today was a big down day. And just a refresher to everybody out there and to those of you who may be joining for the first time, the volatility model, by definition, from how I define volatility, is a market move of 1% or greater, or negative 1% or less than. So negative 1%, negative 1.5%, negative 3%, whatever it is, plus 1%, plus 2%, whatever it is. Anything in between, I'm not counting. Okay, this is daily closes. All right. And I do this for the NASDAQ, the Dow, the S&P, and the Russell 2000, consistent across what we do here on a daily basis with those numbers. Now, going back about 20 years with 20 years worth of data, what I am anticipating for the remainder of the year, At minimum, if this volatility model is going to continue to hold water, and so far it has been, so if it continues to hold water, and I have a lot of confidence in it, then here is likely to be the outcomes for the remainder of the year at a minimum. And I stress this because I'll explain why. At a minimum, the NASDAQ will have volatile days, at least two per week, for the remainder of this year. That's the NASDAQ. Two volatile days per week for the remainder of the year. For the Dow, it's 3 days per week. They got a lot of catching up to do. For the S&P 500, 3 days as well per week. They have a lot of catching up to do. And the Russell 2000 is 1 day per week of a volatile session. Now, if this is true, that we are going to witness this type of volatility, and again, we're agnostic as to whether it goes up or whether it goes down, although if history is any indicator, when you have this type of volatility, it tends to be weighted towards the downside. Q4 is setting up to be a roller coaster, okay? Today's podcast title, Manufacturing Down, Volatility Up, the first day of the fourth quarter. Is this a sign of things to come? I think it could be, all right? Now, the reason why I say buckle up is because despite the fact that in regards to the Russell and the NASDAQ, you're talking 1 day a week or 2 days a week, respectively, I don't think that'll hold true if the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 both suffer volatile days, three volatile days a week for the remainder of this year. Because if you got the big boys going down or driving this market higher, either way, it's going to carry with it the remainder of the NASDAQ and the small caps in either direction. Because if it's a major risk-on event, then everybody's going to want to jump on board and catch it, the fear of missing out trade. And if everything's going down, everybody's going to abandon ship. Now, I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't. All I know is this volatility model, as simple as it is, and we love simple here at the Capital News, it's been holding the test of time over the course of this 20-year period. So, and how I'm looking at this too, ladies and gentlemen, just so you understand, is 2017 was a year of extremely low volatility. 2018 spiked, and most of that was in the latter half of the year, primarily focused on Q4 of last year, where you had the market hit that 10% correction and then that 20% bear market across some markets. So a lot of that volatility was weighted towards the end of last year. Well, when you have this type of volatility, low volatility to high volatility, 2017, 2018, now we're in 2019, you anticipate that at a minimum, if history is any indicator, and like I said, so far this has been proving true, that 2019 is going to match the amount of volatile days of 2018. Now, for the NASDAQ, not too far away. For the Russell, relatively close. But for the Dow and the S&P 500, not even close. That's why we got three volatile days per week. Per week, at a minimum, for the rest of this year. Assuming we got 12 weeks remaining in this year. So, buckle up as far as I'm concerned. And this could go either way. This could turn out to be that melt-up situation that we've been talking about over the past couple of months. Or this could be a redo of last year. Or the volatility model could be completely wrong. Now, I know, well, Alex, what are you talking about? Anybody could say it's going up, down, or staying the same. Of course. But what you're doing and what everybody on Wall Street and any trading desk or any research house is doing, they're looking at these types of models. Some of them much more complicated, and that's fine. Whatever works, works. But I am just relaying to you the information that I look at to forecast these markets. And we've done a pretty decent job here since this podcast has been on the air. We've done an excellent job with our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, that was published in 2015. A lot of that has been proven true, and a lot of it now from our midterm and long-term scenarios is playing out right now. So, you know, we do a pretty good job here at forecasting what's likely to transpire. Can we give you exact dates? No. No, I'm not going to pretend to time this thing. No, I'm not going to do that. But looking at these types of models, that's the type of volatility that is likely to transpire over the remaining course of this year. And when you have the political turmoil that exists, when you have the uncertainties surrounding trade, when you have the protests in Hong Kong and in the Middle East again, when you have Brexit uncertainty, and that has to be resolved or at least theoretically resolved by the end of this month, when you have central banks ready to do emergency measures but not call them emergency measures, what do you think is going to happen? Either way, it's not going to end well, because these are the same people who caused these problems. Now they are tasked with trying to prolong this or to quote-unquote fix it. These are the wrong people to do it. These are the people that caused it. So manufacturing down, volatility up. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a pleasure having you. As always, please like, share, subscribe, and get the word out and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.